Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from three local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, PMHNP.
And I'm Melissa Black, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond.
Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
Welcome. This is Melissa.
And I'm Morgan.
And Adelia, producing.
And we are continuing our discussion on disability, disability rights, disability, all the things in our part two today.
Minus Mr. Mike.
Minus Mike.
Still gone.
Yes.
He's having fun in Europe.
Yes.
He's traveling around Europe.
They sent us a picture. I am so jealous.
Yeah, it looks great. It looks very nice.
Spring in Europe. Mm-hmm. I never experienced it, but I would like to, I think. I'm convinced it would probably be nice.
Mm-hmm. It's good for the mental health.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, we're knee deep in this discussion. And I think there's when I'm doing or talking with people about their options, which, you know, a patient comes, they're having difficulty, and this is a short term type of thing, you know, and they want to take time off work, you know, so maybe we should, I feel like there's a fair amount of education that I end up doing with folks, just kind of giving them some ideas of what is possible for them. That can be really confusing. So FMLA, short term disability, versus long-term disability. So how do you approach that when you're talking with people?
The first step is definitely finding out with their employer what systems are in place. Mm-hmm. Is there an HR department? Like, who are they able to contact, you know, to be able to do that? With like an at-will employer, I believe like there are certain types of employment where that is not going to be an option for that individual. So finding that out for sure. And then figuring out where to get the forms and then how to fill them out. And I feel like I learned a lot of that by kind of getting thrown under the bus by like a provider, you know, handing me the paperwork. Okay, you fill this out.
That happened all the time.
Like, I don't know what to freaking do. So
I'm not that person. I'm not filling this out. And, fill it out. I'm like, what?
And you do have to have like a conversation with the patient about like there, because there are different ways you can do it. It's like there's the continuous, which, you know, if we're talking to someone in a crisis, you know, a continuous leave for a certain amount of days or weeks versus an intermittent leave where you're able to take, you know, so many hours off a month that is protected and you don't get paid disability money for it.
This is FMLA.
The FMLA, you can use your PTO if you have earned PTO, but you don't have to. So it can kind of protect that, but it also protects your job attendance wise. So under the Family Medical Leave Act, that's like one of the big protections is like, just because you have this going on, you need to take either this continuous or this intermittent time off. We can't fire you because of this. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, let's take an example of like a nurse working in the hospital. So let's say they needed a short-term leave, start out with FMLA, then go to short-term disability because of some, like a knee replacement, let's say. You know, there will be the FMLA paperwork. There will be the short-term disability paperwork, which is very, very similar. But then if their recovery time is so long, depending on their contract with their employer, you know, they may not end up going back to that same position on that same floor that they were in. But, you know, they may have to go into like a different position or
pick. Because they can't like physically do it based on where they're at with
like
recovery.
That floor, well, no, like, so let's say they were gone for so long, that floor had to fill that position. So they'll have to go to a different position within that hospital or that medical organization or whatever. So, but you still, okay, I'm going to have my benefits. I'm going to have a position. I'm not going to be without a job. There's still so much anxiety and potential change in that anyways, but that, you know, that's one example. Another example, and this comes up a lot in my practice, is like folks with different mental health concerns. What comes to mind initially is like anxiety and PTSD mm-hmm. that are mm-hmm. severe, where you have big triggers or you have like a really bad day. And occasionally you really do need decreased stimulation to be able to rest your nervous system, rest your body, so that you can continue to be there like as fully as possible. And so then, you know, having that flexibility to take a few days here and there, you know, one day here, one day there. I'd say that's the most common that I mm-hmm. write for folks.
I would agree. Yeah. People with panic disorder. So, panic attacks, which can really happen at any time, which is a scary thing about the disorder, but can be triggered by stress. And, you know, a lot of times there's tension in the job, tension with a supervisor. The person is feeling very supervised and watched, and that is not a great foundation for anxiety. Yeah. I mean,
right.
is a fertile ground for anxiety. So, yeah, I see that quite a bit.
And another thing that would come up, it does come up a lot, are, and I do really, I've seen this personally, like bully employers, bully mm-hmm. bosses, mm-hmm. toxic workplaces, toxic departments.
Well, so this is the hard thing because, because there are, there's legitimate, from the employer perspective, which I'm not an employer, but from an employer perspective and from coworkers, I mean, you know, when somebody is not able to be there, that it does cause a change in the workflow of whatever the job is. Mm-hmm. And so it can put stress on other people or cause things to change. And for managers and things, I would imagine irritation or just frustration or I could see how that could happen. I don't think that's right. I don't think it should. But,
right.
People are stressed. People are stressed out. So
I feel like that's overarching a lot of how this, you know, comes up in our day to day. But then I also think about the folks who do have those permanent disabilities, who have, permanent limitations. And as costs of living rise, you know, and the disability amounts or what they're able to make. And there's, you know, if they are able to do a certain type of job for a certain amount of hours, like the stress of not knowing if you're going to be able to pay for all your medicines, pay for food. I just feel like that has like permeated the majority of our society, you know.
I don't think that we have a good social welfare network or, what do they call it? Like for people who do fall on hard times, you know, whether they be in this case, like working folks who are, you know, met with a disability or met with a situation that causes, that makes it difficult for them to work.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, whereas in other countries, it seems like there's much more support, protection, pregnancy comes to mind, so working as a nurse, I worked with a lot of women, you included, and very strategic about the use of FMLA and short-term disability with pregnancy.
Yep.
And they're like, I am going to need, my 12 weeks of FMLA, and I'm also going to need the short-term disability, but I got this PTO, so I can use this PTO for, this amount of time, so I can be off with the kid for like three months as a new mom. Like, that's crazy.
My brother-in-law is like in SEO, like business, master's degree guy doing like search engine, like ad stuff. And the place that he worked, I mean, he got like 3 to 6 months of paid paternity leave. Mm-hmm. But that just made me think of all of the folks I know working in and any other job that doesn't have that, but especially like the medical field, like mm-hmm. no maternity leave, like you have to bleed every resource dry and save up. And you get sick before your leave, like too bad, you need to save that money for time off for the baby. I mean,
yeah, because I mean, the employer is very much thinking about it from a resources perspective. You know, we need, you know, you being off, and we need the, we need you as a resource, you know, to provide the service. It's, you become less of a person. I mean, you are not a person, really. It's a secondary concern. And that's where like a human resources department would come in. They'd be like the intermediary.
It's like we are humans, not machines.
Right. And there's lots that can be talked about in terms of like, you know, capitalism and just consumerism and, you know, the value of work is really either in providing a service that's going to make somebody money. Mm-hmm. And if you are not doing that, then it's costing money.
Yeah. And with a stress. So like my late grandfather, my mom's stepdad was a DO, and he always said, you know, stress is the cause of all disease. Mm. And that stuck with me. I remember him saying that to me when I was a little kid. Granted, this was being a little kid with a severe anxiety disorder who would get a nervous rash from head to toe. Even when I got excited, I would be happy, excited.
You're like, I'm already stressed out.
Nervous rash head to toe. So like, that's been part of my vocabulary for a long time. And they're like, you just need to relax, Melissa. You just calm down. But like looking, you know, fast forwarding now to age 45, like all of the things that end up having, you know, that have kind of blossomed or whatever medically for me, you know, the number one thing on the treatment plan is rest, reduce stress, do less, stop doing so much. Mm-hmm. When you have the pressure of supporting your family, or like, you know, I didn't have a supportive partner for a long time. And then I had a kid. So like, you know, if I didn't, I'm very, very grateful mm-hmm. for my folks and for my sister and my brother-in-law. But a lot of the folks that we are talking to and a lot of people out mm-hmm. there don't have that community. I see the stress and the isolation of kind of what's happening as like compounding so many of these issues that are, I think, making things more disabling. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that is too.
It does. Well, that's my experience too. Absolutely. And I think now people are stretched very thin financially. People are on the margins, the working poor, or people who are, you know, making it paycheck to paycheck, and there is just a whole lot of those people are very stressed. I mean, mm-hmm. just very, very stressed. And so if something happens, which life just happens, you break an arm, you know, something, whatever it may be, the stress of not being able to work is so, I mean, all they want to do is just get back to work, get back to work, get back to work.
It's like the snake eating its own tail. Mm-hmm. They're stressed about the leave, about the money, about getting back to work, which then is inflaming whatever is going on, making it harder for them to recover and heal. I think about 2019. I think it was 2019. No, 2020. Summer of 2020, I moved in with Ryan. There was a lot of cohabitation stress with our teenagers. His oldest, you know, has a lot of mental health concerns. So there were a lot of like mental health crises happening at home and then going to work and in the hospital and handling, you know, supporting folks in crisis there. And then I was also having to sell my house like kind of rapidly, like unexpectedly. So I go into an EDS flare. So my joints are all wobbly and now they're more wobbly. And then I'd like step wrong on a piece of ground and fall down and break my elbow. Mm. But like, I still like looking at that, it was like, okay, the stress mm-hmm. was the impetus. And then the dominoes fell. And like, it ended with me, you know, having the broken elbow, having to be off work.
And as nurses, we look at things, you know, family, how things affect the individual, how they affect the family. So yes. FMLA is also used for family members.
Yes.
So there's, you know, it has to be a parent or a child, or, you know, there's certain criteria for what that means. But, you know, if somebody is not able to take off work to care for somebody, you know, their parent or whoever that, then is unable to stay in the home, and then they are then cared for in, you know, like in a nursing home, or, I mean, this sort of thing has an enormous impact, a ripple effect of how is it that we care for ourselves? How is it that we care for our loved ones?
Yes.
And how is that supported or not supported by the work environment? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of just crazy that there needs to be such a bite about this.
That's my like essential feeling at the center of this is like, why are these hoops here? What is the deal? Like,
and the HR department or the employer would say, well, people will take advantage of this, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, I think maybe you are thinking about this from a top down perspective.
Yes.
And, you know, it, if you back away, the, you know, 1,000-yard view is, you know, why are you making it difficult? Why is the work environment making it difficult for people to take care of themselves?
Yes. Yes. Why is taking care of ourselves and true? I mean, and, you know, acknowledging, yes, folks can, you know, work the system or whatever.
And it happens. I mean, it definitely happens.
It happens. I think it happens way less than people may think.
Out of curiosity, have you guys run into that in your own personal situations where you were like, yeah, I don't think this is...
Malingering. We have a whole word for it. Malingering.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, there's... So I haven't necessarily had somebody who sought, you know, paperwork just because I won't do it for... Like if somebody comes to me on an intake and is seeking disability documentation... That's not what I do. I mean, there are people that do that.
Right.
So they want, you know, quote unquote, a disability evaluation or something like that. And that's just not what I do. What I find more is that, and I talk about people when they go on leave, I say, well, you know, it's hard to come back, you know. So what are you thinking for? And, you know, this is all unknown, but let's just have a little bit of a conversation about like time frame. And what you perceive on the other end of like coming back into work, or do you feel like you can do that?
Right.
Because people are off for, say, 3 months, 12 weeks, and then the 12 weeks are up, and then either like the situation hasn't really changed, or now like the fear of going back to work has built up and become a really big thing.
Yeah.
So that... People extending, I think, is what I see, maybe beyond what.
Yes.
That would make sense, yeah.
And that's where I have run into a situation semi-recently where, like, I am able to say what I'm able to say, but, like, someone has a constellation of health issues and mental health is only this, like, one part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, so the pressure to, like I can't. I think they, not the patient, but like the insurance company, I got, you know, they sent me this letter saying like, you know, it seems like you're making your assessments based on patient report. And I was like, how else am I making my assessments? Verbally?
AI.
Yeah. Am I following them around? And it kind of brought up this thing where I was like, you know, if I'm sitting across from someone and they say they can't stand up out of a chair, I'm going to believe that person that they can't stand up out of the chair. I'm talking to them for a half an hour. Am I taking their chair away, making them? Nope, you need, you know, so.
Well, here,
let's really assess this.
Well,
let's assess
it. Well, you feel, you know, because psychiatry, there is, you know, subjective data is data that you get from what a person is reporting. Pain is a classic example. I can't, you know, there's somebody says they have 10 out of 10 pain. I don't know what their pain feels like. So a lot of, you know, mood, anxiety, you know, certain things are descriptive from the patient. Whereas with, you know, leg strength, if somebody broke their leg and now they're rehabbing from that, we can, you know, there are ways to measure the progress of how well that leg is, you know, strengthening over time. And so I think a lot of HR, and this comes down to, I think, stigma with mental health and that more like, oh, is the person just faking this?
Right.
You know, how do you really know? And, you know, from a mental health clinician perspective, it's like, I mean, you know the person, and
it's exactly,
like, you know. But if the other, if you, it's the disability documentation world is very, it can be picked apart. I mean,
yes.
You know, the language that's used to describe things. I mean, you kind of have to think about it like what a lawyer or somebody would think about if they read those,
mm-hmm.
Because it can be very scrutinized. Scrutinized is probably the best word.
And what I was kind of struck with is, okay, I have this training. I've known this person for many years. This is what I'm stating. I believe them that like they are not able to work in that capacity right now, and I'm signing my name to that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that is not enough. My assessment data, mm-hmm. my notes, my mm-hmm. opinion, you know, is not enough. And the pressure that is experienced to like make sure that person has what they need, but not being able to do that, it being up to that insurance company.
Well, and the stress of just this process,
yes.
is enormous,
yeah.
for the person. And I think we should also talk about, you know, long-term disability, which is a very different. Well, I mean, it's similar, but it's a different process.
Yeah.
But the whole process is just fair, whether it be short term or long term, it's incredibly stressful to the person.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have any money. They're like, am I going to get, you know, my back pay, or I'm going to get this and my rent's due, and they're juggling things and they're not paying this, but they're paying this. I mean, it's
like food insecurity, facing homelessness. Oh, and here, do this paperwork and go to these appointments and keep your car running. I it's such a nightmare.
It is. Yeah. And so long-term disability is somebody who is requesting the Social Security Administration to, determine that they are permanently disabled, or at least disabled for what, greater than 12 months.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will provide cash assistance, but money, disability payments to help with
cost
of living and survival. And so that is, and a lot of people will kind of confuse the two, like,
yeah.
oh, when, you know, do I get my disability check? So in long-term disability, the federal government is providing the money. In short-term, and correct me if I'm wrong, because mm-hmm. I'm not totally sure that I understand this 100%, but short-term disability, in my experience, has been like an insurance company that you are paying money into. But go ahead. So then the insurance company is required to pay you a certain amount.
So there's short-term disability. That's always the insurance company. There's long-term disability that you can purchase through an insurance mm-hmm. company. And mm-hmm. then after a certain amount of time, depending on that insurance policy for the long-term disability, they'll then ask you to apply for Social Security disability. If someone doesn't have a long-term disability insurance, like that's something that I always paid like an extra $2 a month
or
whatever.
Nurse, yeah.
So that then you would get something if it was, you know, more than 6 months or 3 months mm-hmm. or whatever that was. Mm-hmm. But the application processes are separate. So mm-hmm. you have to keep up with all of the insurance company paperwork. And then when you have to apply for Social Security disability based on their recommendation or based on not having that long-term disability insurance, it's a whole other, you know, pile.
But so there's no Social Security short-term disability.
No.
That's not a thing, right?
No.
Yeah.
FMLA kind of covers that mm-hmm. without payment, but, you know, gives you a little bit of that protection sort of in between there.
So when somebody's applying for Social Security disability, this is when, you know, in our world, it's more, you know, schizophrenia, bipolar 1 disorder, mm-hmm. somebody who is very impaired
yes.
and cannot have a job or hold a job for a reasonable period of time.
Yeah.
And there are other reasons that people, you know, seek this. And it's a long process. It
yes.
can be a long process, years.
Yes.
Usually you have to have a lawyer to just navigate through the system.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of lawyers that do this. You contact them and, most of the time people don't have money to pay the lawyer if they're seeking, you know, disability.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawyer will say, okay, well, we're going to do this, but if we get, you know, if we're successful in getting the disability, then you pay us kind of this lump sum,
yeah,
or percentage that you initially will get from the, yeah, government.
My sister is disabled. She has rheumatoid arthritis and EDS. She and I went through nursing school together. And so I kind of, on the sidelines, watched her go through that as well. But she had a lot of, like, family support. Her husband, you know, works and all of that. But I've watched, I don't think she ever did it without the lawyer, but she has kind of helped inform me with, like, encouraging my patients who are talking, mm-hmm, to me about it, mm-hmm, to, like, actually, yes, I think you should go through that, mm-hmm, lawyer, because, mm-hmm, doing it on your own, it is at least a part-time to three-quarter time job.
Yeah.
I mean, and the stress, like, so then it's actually kind of making everything worse.
Yeah, yeah. And it's almost always that the person is denied the first, yes, time. I mean, that's just kind of the rule. So you,
yeah,
do have to apply a second time, a third time.
Yeah.
It's pretty, and I always like to remind people who maybe have an opposing views of social welfare programs that these folks do not get a lot of money.
Not at all. It is not enough.
It is not enough to live on.
Nope. From what my sister gets, even having two dependents, she would not be able to pay bills.
Yeah. A Psychodelicious Conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google Therapy, or therapist in your area. Check your community mental health or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike, Morgan, and Melissa welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send your emails to psych.delish@gmail.com. That's psych.delish@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton, Morgan Bowen, and Melissa Black, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.